Hi, hello, welcome to another episode of the Gaze into the Blue Light podcast. Every week we discuss notable books, movies, TV shows, video games, documentaries, etc., etc. Anything you can find on your screens, putting off that gorgeous blue light. This week we have an amazing episode! Exclamation point. We're kicking off a brand new season, season two, with a new format and a new co-host. More about that later. We'll cover some seriously good books today and chat about what we've been watching, what we've been reading. I've got myself a beverage prepared. I'm here. You're here. Scrappy is here. Let's do this. Okay. Hi, hello. As I said in the introduction, this is an exciting time in the life of the podcast. I did 13 episodes of season one. And I would, if I had to title season one, I would title it just messing around and figuring this thing out. Having season two does not mean that I have it figured out by any means, but it means we're switching things up just a little bit. And one way we're doing that is by bringing back by popular demand our food, wine, and travel correspondent, Nikki. She's here.
I'm here.
And after an exhaustive search and interview process.
Wow.
I mean, that was a lot, right?
Yeah, it really was.
You were selected.
Oh my God, I know, I can't believe it.
You were selected in the talent search.
I cannot believe it.
To be the co-host.
I know, I feel so honored.
Did you have it in mind the whole time and you were secretly planning?
Maybe. Yeah, I might have been secretly planning for it.
Okay, well, whatever your secret plan was, it worked. So I'm really happy that season two, you'll be here with us every single time.
I'm so excited. I'm nervous.
What are you nervous about?
What if I ruin your podcast?
You won't. That's impossible. It can't get any worse. It defies all logic.
Yeah.
You can't make something that's awful.
I don't even think worse. So. I think it's been great. I think it's been great.
Thank you. And I'm excited because I want to share the time a little bit. And so instead of just me talking about the things that I've been enjoying, I'm excited to bring on another person that looks at, or not looks at, but like watches and reads things that I don't. And so I think that's valuable. And then, yeah, that'll be cool to share some stuff.
It will be cool.
So I think to make it equal, hosting responsibilities, each week we're each going to bring something.
Yep.
So we'll each choose one thing to bring to the podcast to talk about.
Sounds good.
It can be a book. It can be a movie, a documentary, an app, a phone game, a video game.
Podcast?
It could be a podcast.
I guess you're not gazing into the light necessarily. You're listening, but still.
I would say anything that exists on digital devices would qualify. So, and books that we read in actual book format, I think count because we never know whether our listeners are gonna download them on their Kindle, that's on their phone, listen to the audiobook. Yep. We don't know.
That's true.
So whatever you want to bring.
Perfect.
Whatever's interesting to you.
Things.
Okay, nice. So I think we should also address the fact that it's the end of January.
It's the end of January. Now, purists may say it's not the 31st, or that maybe we should drink on February 1st, well, but we make our own rules, and so we are having a drink on the podcast.
You're officially the co-host now, mm-hmm. and so...
I do what I want.
You do what you want.
So... And we've had a crazy month. I mean, just with, like, you mentioned this on the podcast, like, stressful events, all kinds of... I just got a text message that distracted me. We'll get to that later. Sorry, I'm not being a very good co-host right now.
No.
Stressful events in politics, exciting events in politics, exciting events in our personal life with the house... it was a big week with progress on the house, so drinks are in order.
Share a little bit about your Dry January experience.
Oh yeah, that's a good question. Well, my Dry January experience was really good, and I'll get into another aspect of it later with the book that I brought. But, yeah, I think overall, I felt really good. I felt like I was sleeping really good. I always have like kind of interesting dreams, weird dreams, but I feel like they got even more like in depth, and like a bunch of weird random people from the past were coming up in my dreams, like old friends and stuff. It was strange. So that was good. Yeah, I felt like I had a bit more energy and just sort of learned some new, like, routines. Like, I started to, like, get really into, like, having tea. Mm-hmm. Hot lemon water I started to have recently from the book that I was reading. So, yeah, I thought it was really good overall. I read a lot more because typically I only read, like, at night. And so when I was... completely sober every night of the month, I would just like pound. I read 3 books this month, which is unheard of for me. Usually it takes me like 3 months to read one book because I read very slowly and sporadically. So that was a good thing. Yeah, I think it just really kind of forced me to look at my like relationship with alcohol. Mm-hmm. And how I want that to be like moving forward. So I don't think a lot has changed in terms of what I like investigated or the conclusion that I came to. I mean, I still enjoy, you know, really good wine pairing with a meal, mm-hmm. or like just sitting around listening to music, having some wine with you. So those kind of things. What about you?
Well, I had a good experience with Dry January. Mm-hmm. It did make me realize how just quickly and easily I just turned to just have beer. Like, mm-hmm. have a beer or, you know, a glass of wine or a whiskey, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Without giving it a second thought,
without giving it a second thought, mm-hmm. and just, like, being done with work, mm-hmm. is reason enough to have a drink or something like that. Or a Saturday afternoon with no plans or whatever is just, you know, without even thinking about it. So I think it does making me think more about it. I also slept better. Mm-hmm. And I also had more intricate dreams. I think that alcohol before bed was shutting that level sleep down for me. I enjoyed experimenting and trying out new different beverages. I think without Dry January, I never would have had Athletic. Beer from Athletic Brewing. Scrappy is just...
Sorry, Scrappy does this every time we have a podcast. He cannot handle it.
He hates it. but I was actually really impressed with... I liked that toast.
Oh yeah, that
wine.
Was, I would still have that. Yeah. Like, yeah.
We would have never had that. Mm-hmm. I like the Casamara.
Yeah, something.
Something like that.
Casamara's Club.
I liked those sodas. We never would have had those. I tried 3 of the beers from Athletic Brewing Company. Oh. And Scrappy, we're doing something important. And I really like those. I would say I think my favorite dry January beverage was the Athletic Brewing Company's Dark. The dark beer. I can't remember what it was called.
It had really like, was it like Blackout Stout or something like that? Or
no, I took a picture
something
of
something out.
But it was really good. It was really smoky and delicious. And I would say overall a success, a successful month. I'm proud of us for doing it.
Me too.
I had my doubts, but we made it through.
Especially with like being at home.
And so, yeah, I'm glad we did it.
Yeah, me too.
And so now to celebrate.
Why don't we toast to something?
A new season. A new co-host.
Yes.
And the end of dry January.
Love.
We are having.
I'm sorry, I got this for you for Christmas.
This is one of my Christmas gifts. Yeah, it was. This is Founders. I wonder why you bought this for me. It's called Founders Backwoods Bastard.
I know you like Founders. Don't they make that really good, like, breakfast stout?
I think they have a breakfast stout.
They always have cool labels.
And the man on the label is a very angry-looking old man with a long beard. What are you trying to tell me?
I did not get that because I think that you're a bastard.
That's rude. it's in their barrel-aged series, ale aged in oak bourbon barrels. Founders Brewing Backwoods Bastard. On the back, it says it's 11%.
Woo!
And to expect lovely warm smells of single malt scotch, oaky bourbon barrels, smoke, sweet caramel, roasted malts, a bit of earthy spice, and a scintilla of dark fruit. It's a kickback sipper made to excite the palate. So I'm excited about
that.
It's
going to excite the palate. It's going to be toasty.
It was bottled on December 17th, 2020.
That's interesting. So it was on, full disclosure, it was on this like,
That's not that far. I'm getting my 20s
Oh my god, you thought it was like a whole year old. I was like, it was on this sort of like sale rack, I think. Maybe that's why, but no. It was just on like a seasonal like kind of rack.
Yes, it's perfectly reasonable. I'm still in getting my 20s and 21s mixed up. All right, let's try this.
Okay, let's do it. And I love that you're having this in the Goose Island Bourbon Stout glass because they're no longer in business. They were one of the pandemic...
the Philly one.
What do you want to call it? Yeah, the Philly one.
Goose Island is still in, still a thing.
Restaurant graveyard of
the
pandemic.
Yeah, the Philly one is gone.
This doesn't look very dark. Looks like more caramely, huh?
Yeah.
Let's give her a smell.
Scrappy, you can't have any. Dogs can't have beer.
They do make dog beer. Oh boy.
That is a bastard.
Wow, that's intense.
Scrappy, we're busy.
Speaking of bastard, one of us here is a old bastard that looks like that guy on the...
He's angry he didn't get promoted to co-host. He made it through more rounds of interviews than you would think a dog would.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he didn't get the final call.
Oh, don't worry. He'll always interject himself into the podcast.
He's a little sour. All right. Well, that is a great beer. It is
delicious. Seriously
a sipper. Like, that is going to take me a while.
It's like a, like you will sip this the way that you would like a bourbon, right?
Yeah. It's very roasty and malty.
Delish.
It is very sweet. I have to say, I don't love the sweet dark fruit. The sweet caramel dark fruit is I'm not a huge fan of, but I think it's balanced out with the malty, smoky kind of flavor. Delicious. Well, how about a cheers to season 4?
Cheers, and thank you for asking me to be your co-host.
You answered the call.
I feel like you were like asking me to marry you or something. It's a big deal.
I already did that. So, you're here. Let's talk about something that I'd like to start doing on every show.
Okay.
Where we kind of start things off by kind of bringing something from the internet.
Okay.
To the table and sharing with it some kind of news from the past week or an interesting article or something that you stumbled upon from this week's news cycle. And sharing it. Do you want to go first?
Sure. Okay. So I found something very interesting from NPR. The title is Friend or Foe? Naked Mole Rats Can Tell You by a Unique Squeak.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen what a naked mole rat looks like?
I can picture what I think a naked mole rat looks like.
Would you like to see what it looks like?
I would love to see a naked mole rat. Oh my god, that thing is frightening.
It's terrifying. There are other pictures where they have these like long, kind of like very wrinkly bodies.
Oh dear.
That are very pale. That's, they're not attractive.
It's not an attractive animal.
No, they're hard to look at. But so this article was really interesting. I like Hidden Brain, those kind of podcasts. I like research and data. So this was a very interesting research kind of experiment, I guess, if you will, or how they came about figuring out that mole rats speak their own dialect. And the young ones, what do you think the young ones are called?
Pups.
Oh my god, how did you know? They are called pups. And so they learn the dialect as they grow up. Have you read this? Is that how you know?
No, okay. I just guessed.
Oh my god. So I'm just going to tell you some interesting facts. So another thing that was super interesting was they kind of operate the same way that like a bee colony would. They have a queen, and she maintains control. She makes sure everyone's adhering to the dialect because different groups of them will have different dialects. So they're in a group now of animals that have their own dialect. Can you guess, obviously, other than humans, what other animal groups have their own dialects?
Ooh. Good trivia question.
I know.
I'm gonna guess whales.
Yes.
How many more are there? Are there just a few or are there a lot?
They just list humans, whales, and one other one.
Monkeys? Some kind of monkeys?
That's a very good guess. Songbirds. Other interesting things about these, rat mole rats, naked mole rats, they're cold-blooded, they survive in little oxygen, they resist cancer and pain, and they can live for 30 years.
They resist pain?
Certain kinds of pain, they resist it, they resist cancer. Isn't this crazy?
Was there talk about possibly using those abilities and figuring out how you can do that in humans?
I think they already like probably are experimenting on them, which is how they found out about the sounds. They make 25 different sounds. This one made me laugh out loud. One of the sounds is the toilet call. The queen sings a song every time she goes into the toilet area. Isn't this crazy? Most of their communication is a soft chirp, and the reason that it's called friend or foe is because just with like a small chirp, they'll know if that one is like a part of their group or an enemy, and they'll get ready to like fight.
Can I ask what the purpose of the toilet call is?
It seems like it's because they have a communal toilet chamber. So it's sort of like, hey, I'm in here. Like, I'm on the shitter. Like, don't come in kind of thing. That's like how I would interpret it. Sorry, am I allowed to? I might mix this podcast a little more spicy with cursing.
The Season one was all clean, and I didn't click the explicit button, but I might have to change that for season two.
I mean, that's not, like, a terrible word.
No.
But anyway, yeah, so, like, hey, I'm in, somebody's in here, like, don't come in.
Yeah.
Like.
That's interesting. The queen's using the toilet.
But they can all use the communal toilet, but I guess the queen in particular has a toilet song. It didn't say if any of the other ones have a toilet song.
That's interesting.
Isn't this crazy?
I did not know that. That's a good article.
Yeah, it's a super good article. Do you want to hear what they sound like? They also use one of my favorite words, which is cacophony.
It's a good word.
Good word. Now, let me just play you a very small clip of what their chirping sounds like. And then we can move on. Oh.
Where is it?
I mean, I had it right here. Oh, here we go. It just sounds like a bird.
I can barely hear it.
You can barely hear it, but it basically just sounds like a little baby bird. Like,
yeah. I wonder what the toilet call sounds like.
Ow. Ooga.
It's like a howling screech. Well, we will...
I'll try to Google toilet call for next time.
I don't know what you'll find. We'll put the link for that article in the show's description.
So interesting.
So people can find it. Thank you. See? Great article.
Yeah, I know. And also Google the naked mole rats because they are really special looking.
They are special. Only a queen
would
love.
Only a queen would love them.
So my article that I'm bringing is, I feel like it's tough to follow that one.
Well, you can go first next time.
You set a pretty high standard. My article is also from NPR.
What?
I know.
Get out.
So the headline is, Amanda Gorman and poetry will be part of Super Bowl 55.
That's awesome.
So Super Bowl 55 is coming up next Sunday. And it will be between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yes. Yes, yes.
And Amanda Gorman was recently kind of catapulted into fame. This article calls her the country's newest literary superstar, 22-year-old poet Amanda Gorman. She was the National Youth Poet Laureate that dazzled viewers with her poem, The Hill We Climb, at President Biden's inauguration.
Amazing.
And I have to say, I was watching, and I don't really care what side of the aisle you're on. That was an impressive display.
So impressive.
And I think she kind of just dropped everybody's jaw for a collective jaw drop for the 3 or 4 minutes that she was sharing her poem. It was really good.
Gave me chills.
Gave me chills as well. I think it gave a lot of people chills. And so I was really excited to see that she was going to be performing, or no, reciting.
Okay.
Excuse me, reciting at the Super Bowl pre-show.
Wow.
On February 7th before the football teams play.
That's cool.
And there are a few interesting things in this article. It says that she has the potential to reach far more Americans at her Super Bowl appearance than on Inauguration Day. So, how many people would you say view the football game?
Oh, God.
In 2020 Super Bowl.
Well, can I ask a question? Is it aired in other countries or, like, not legally? They can, like, torrent it or something?
I do not know the answer to that question.
But okay.
The article says Americans.
I'm going to guess 3 million people watch it.
Well, this is kind of weird because I don't know how many Americans there are. How many people live in America?
I don't know either. I mean, is in Florida alone, aren't there like 20 million people or something?
I have no idea. Ask the Oracle. How many people live in America?
Hey, Siri. How many people live in the United States of America?
In 2019, the population of United States of America was 32,82,39,523.
Oh. You read that in a really ridiculous way. 328 million people.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes good sense.
328 million. Okay.
So how many of 328 million do you think watch Super Bowl?
6 million. 20. I don't know.
So this says
so hard.
Viewership for the 2020 Super Bowl peaked at 99.9 million.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
By contrast, President Biden's inauguration, which was one of the most watched in American history, drew 33.8 million.
Wow.
So if you thought her stage was big for the inauguration, it is much bigger for the Super Bowl, which is really cool.
That's so cool.
So at the pre-show, which I'm hoping will be televised. I mean,
yeah, I'm sure it will.
She's going to read a new poem that honors three Americans. One of them is a Los Angeles educator. One of them is a nurse in Florida. Mm. One of them is a Marine veteran from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that volunteers for the Wounded Warrior Project. And so they're all kind of being recognized. They've been named honorary captains for the Super Bowl by the NFL. So they're going to get recognized in that way. And she's going to recite a new poem.
Wow, I love that.
At the Super Bowl, which I think is really cool.
That's so cool.
There was another question that I didn't know was if a poet has ever read at a Super Bowl before. My guess is no.
My guess would be no.
But it doesn't say. But it also adds that she also signed a modeling contract.
She was gorgeous. She is gorgeous.
With one of the world's top modeling agencies. Side note, as did Vice President Harris's stepdaughter, Ella Imhoff.
Get out!
So they both signed modeling contracts.
That's amazing.
I know there was a lot
of... God, it really is such a stage to be recognized.
There was a lot of talk about Ella Imhoff's coat.
Okay.
That she wore.
I couldn't tell you who she was because there were so many people on the stage.
And if you're interested in learning more about Amanda Gorman, she also has three upcoming books.
Oh, awesome.
To be published. And one of them is a children's book. And a collectible edition of her inauguration poem will be published March 16th.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so...
That's great.
Is going from one big stage to another. That's very big stage.
Awesome.
Which is really cool. In an unconventional stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd expect it at the inauguration. Well, you'd expect a poet laureate to read, but she, I feel like, really defied expectations even at the inauguration.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about what the Super Bowl will bring.
I'm excited about that too. How do you think like that will be received by some people that watch the Super Bowl in terms of like if they're just like, well, this is about sports. Like, do you get what I'm saying? I'm trying to be like sensitive about how I'm saying this.
I think there will probably be people that think that it should be just about sports, but the Super Bowl is almost hardly even about the game.
That's true.
It's a lot of times.
A cultural, like, American event, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's... The game is important, but there's so much fanfare around the event that, like... I mean, the halftime show is longer than they usually are. Like,
really?
Like, players have to sit in the locker rooms longer because the huge halftime extravaganza that's going to be going on. It's going to be the weekend this year.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
So I think...
Although it'll take me 100 million years to get that Blinding Lights song stuck out of my head after he plays it.
It takes a long time to get that unstuck, for sure. I mean, I think it's going to be like with anything. There's going to be people that love it and then people that will find any reason to call it stupid and be mad about it. And there's nothing you can really do about
that. Some people just like to complain about change, I think, is what people get stuck on, right? Is like, well, that's never happened before. Why are we, I think change is what a lot of people have a hard time with. Mm-hmm. Like, things changing, especially, like, something so, like, traditional or, you know, ingrained in American, like, culture as the Super Bowl.
True. Yeah, that is a big deal. And mm-hmm. to mess, well, not mess with it, but change it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably ruffle some feathers, yeah. But I would say for the most part, people will be very excited about it.
I like ruffled feathers. I think it's good.
Ruffling feathers is usually a good idea.
Yeah.
I also want to add something into our new format.
Okay. What?
Which is the mailbag.
What?
I want to encourage our listeners mm-hmm. to send us emails with interesting things to talk about.
Cool.
It doesn't have to be on any particular topic. Questions for us to answer, recommendations, things to watch, things to read, thoughts about the show, whatever things they think we should check out, etc. So you can send us an email, yourhoststeve@gmail.com. That's yourhoststeve. I got a little mixed up there. @gmail.com. Your host, Steve. It's also in the show's description if you just want to click on it. Send us an email and we'll read it on one of our shows and answer your questions or talk about whatever you think we should talk about, which I think is really cool. So I got an interesting message, and this was actually about what we talked about last week. Well, what I talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
Which was cool phone games.
Oh,
and
nice.
I got a really cool recommendation for a phone game from longtime listener, longtime supporter, Brent.
Love it.
Brent of the Oregon.
Brent of the
and
Oregon.
His recommendation is... Scrappy's excited about it.
Yes.
His recommended phone game is called Play Magnus. An official Magnus Carlsen app. So, Brent writes, the world's best chess player's name is Magnus Carlsen. He has an app which allows you to play him at any age. So I love getting beat by a 7-year-old in chess. It's pretty fun. I think he was a grandmaster by the age of 13 and has been the world's best chess player for 6 to 10 years. You should YouTube some videos. They have him playing... Scrappy, I'm reading.
Come on, buddy.
Shh. Sorry. Mm. They have him playing 5 people simultaneously with him being blindfolded. Or he plays 20 people in a room all simultaneously. So that's pretty cool. I thought that was really awesome. I have never heard of that game called Play Magnus. And I did download it. And I played a few games. And there are a few things that I really liked about it. One, I liked it. Just the overall design of the game
mm-hmm.
is like really clean, really smooth. It's not like cheesy at all. It's like nice and crisp. And kind of fun to play. And the sounds are nice.
Ooh.
Like the sounds of the pieces moving is really cool.
Oh, that would be nice.
I also like, at least in the games that I played, it gave you, like when you touched on a piece, it showed you where you could move it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm a very amateur chess player. I know like what the pieces can do.
Gosh, yeah, I don't remember.
I know how to sort of play the game, but I don't know anything more advanced than that. I don't know any openings or whatever.
Like that show, yeah.
The most chess knowledge I have is from the Queen's Game.
Same.
So, and when I was a teacher in Eugene, I was a co-sponsor of the chess club.
That's so cool.
Which was fun. And I did play chess with a fair number of... nerds isn't the right word because they were like totally my favorite people, but they loved playing chess and solving Rubik's cubes, and they would come hang out in my classroom at lunch, and it was really fun. So I like chess. I like what it's about. And I
intellectuals
perhaps.
I like that.
Yes. And I played a few and ended up beating 5-year-old Magnus.
Oh, yep. Whoa.
Yep, beat 5-year-old Magnus.
So when did he start again? When he was 5?
I think that's probably right when he started.
I didn't mean to point that out. Like, I just was wondering.
I think he was just getting the
grasp
of it.
That's crazy.
But I did beat a 5-year-old.
I probably couldn't even beat baby Magnus.
Baby Magnus. But that's pretty cool, and I will be back. And you can learn tips and strategies and different things like that. So I'm going to keep going back and playing that. So,
who told me, I think it was you or someone, and maybe you talked about this in one of your episodes, but one, that there were no chessboards to be found after the Queen's Gambit came out, and that was around Christmas time, so I think there was a big run on it for Christmas gifts. I actually tried to find us a chess set at Target. There were none to be found. Mm. And then didn't you say, or someone, that the cost of the chessboard is mostly reflective of how much it costs to make the horse character? One of the characters is so expensive and intricate to make that it completely dictates what the cost of the board is going to be.
That did not come from me, one. Two, the knight is the horse.
So I think it's the knight. Hmm. Would you, in your mind, would you say that he's the most intricate? I'm trying to picture all the pieces.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a horse's head with, the facial features of a horse, probably.
So he dictates how much it's going to cost.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What an interesting fact.
I know.
So, thank you, Brent, for
Brent,
sending us the message about, what was it called again? I forgot. Play Magnus.
Play Magnus. And that's excellent. A great name, too.
Phone game to play on your phone. If you're a chess fan or you're thinking about being a chess fan, you should check it out. There's free options, and then there is a pro version you can pay for with no ads, and you can play other people. Also, you can play his chess coach or something.
Oh,
like that.
Whoa.
Yeah. So very cool. So I'm looking forward to receiving some mail and some messages that we can chat about next week on our mailbag time. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back to share what we brought.
Awesome. See you soon.
Okay, we're back in action after paying some bills with that ad.
Yes.
Hey, you laugh. I made $2 off of that ad.
I wasn't quite sure what you were referring to. Like, if you meant... Yeah, sorry. Still learning about podcasts.
$2.
Hey, that's nothing to shake a stick
that
at.
That is nothing to shake a stick at. Let's talk about what we've brought to the table, although I feel like first we should talk about what we just finished watching.
Yes.
The Mandalorian.
Oh.
Spoiler alert, by the way. Oh. If you haven't seen up to the end of season 2 of The Mandalorian and you don't want any spoilers, I would suggest fast forwarding a few minutes.
Yeah. Good idea.
But it's been around for a while, so.
Yeah, I would think if people were real into Star Wars, they would have watched it by now, cuz I think we're even a bit late to the party, if you will.
We are late to the Mandalorian party.
Yes.
But there are people that have wondered whether they should watch it or not.
Yes.
And my answer would be definitely yes.
I wholeheartedly agree, because I wouldn't say I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I mean, I just watch Star Wars movies with you, for you. I always end up enjoying them. Like, they usually come out around Christmas, don't they? I feel like we've gone to see them around Christmas time.
Yeah, the big movie release ones for the past, I don't know, 5 years or so have been Christmas ones. Yeah.
Like when movie theaters were still a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Star Wars because I like the creatures, and they make me squeals of delight. I just squeal when I see all of the various creatures, so it keeps me interested.
And did Would you say The Mandalorian had sufficient creature content for you?
Yes, but mostly because I love the baby, so the child, so much that if the whole thing could have sucked, which it didn't, and I would have still watched it just because I love the child, the baby, so much.
The baby Yoda, which
the
is...
The baby Yoda. Oh, not, my God. He's so cute.
Not technically Yoda, which was interesting.
No, what did they call him?
Gorgon? I don't know. I can't remember.
Gorgonzola?
I can't remember the name. So that brings us to where it fits in the Star Wars timeline, which I am no expert on. But it is after the main first three movies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yoda and Luke Skywalker have already done their thing
mm-hmm.
with Obi-Wan, and the Death Star was destroyed.
Yeah.
And Boba Fett rescued, mm-hmm. or what did Boba Fett do? I can't remember what Boba Fett does.
He
already has his cameo in the movie
mm-hmm.
as a bounty hunter. And so this is all happening after the events mm-hmm. of those movies.
Yeah.
And I think it stands alone
mm-hmm.
well without having to watch those movies.
I agree.
I wouldn't say you would feel lost or left out.
No, I didn't feel lost at all.
By any of those things. Yeah, it was very easy to watch. The episodes mm-hmm. were quick. And the storyline, I thought, was
mm-hmm.
compelling and kept us tuning in for the next one and wanting to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how it was like basically like a Western.
Yes, I loved that about it.
Even to the music.
Yes.
Like the kind of like Clint Eastwood Ooh, Western.
Yeah, when the Mandalorian walks around. Yeah.
Yeah. And even like the kind of shootouts mm-hmm. in the street and the...
Like saloon scenes.
Saloon scenes mm-hmm. and like the gunslinger like staring at someone and moving his hand down towards his gun holster on
yes.
his hip and being intimidating and staring. All that kind of stuff was there.
You also compared it to, like, samurai at some points. Like, there was this one part, remember, where they were, like, training a couple people. And they were, you know, doing these different, like, sword moves. And you were like, oh, that's kind of like a samurai movie.
Yes. And I don't know the name of the samurai movie. I want to say The Seven Samurai?
Hmm.
If anyone knows samurai movies better than I do, please send us an email or a tweet to remind me of the mm-hmm. name of that. But I think it might be Seven Samurai, where they are in a town and the village is being like ransacked by thieves and a murderous band of people, and they like hold up in the town and they train mm-hmm. the town how to fight back.
Yes.
And that's also been repurposed as a Clint Eastwood Western movie. I think it's Pale Rider.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's Pale Rider. He's like a lone horseman guy that comes in and like helps save a town. Although I could have the name wrong, but I know there is a Clint Eastwood movie where he does that.
Hmm.
So that kind of storyline is all through The Mandalorian, which mm-hmm. I was surprised about, and I really liked it.
Me too. It was really unique. Mm-hmm. Gave it a unique... So, I don't want to be completely, like, vapid. Just be like, I like the child! Like, I did like other things about it. Like, I don't sound like I'm a child, so... You know, some of the things I loved about it? Strong female characters. The one lady with the tattoo here.
I think it's Cara Dune or Loon,
oh my
something like that.
God.
She's... Oh, wow. Okay, kitchen disaster.
Oh boy, you guys, I'm really sorry about that. So I'm pressing tofu because I'm gonna make a curry. after this. And so the way I press tofu is I set a bowl on top of it, and then I put like a heavy can or a bottle into it to like press it out, the water. You're supposed to do that before you like, you know, bake it or put it in something. And so the bottle just fell out and Scrappy had just an absolute meltdown.
Wow. He's made numerous appearances in this podcast.
That was scary. Whew. Anyway, strong female characters, I thought, was something that kind of ran through the whole thing. Like, at the end, the whole crew they have is, they're all female, except for Boba Fett, but he doesn't even show up. He just leaves. And the Mandalorian. So it's just, like, it's all these, like, boss ladies at the end showing up and taking care of business. And so I really loved that. And I also loved, I thought it was so endearing the way that the Mandalorian, he's so tough and, you know, he doesn't want to get close to anybody. He won't even show anyone his face, but he loves the child more than anything, like, in the whole universe, galaxy. And I think that's kind of endearing and unexpected.
I did not expect that either. And he does develop the strong connection with the baby Yoda. Did you know, I looked up her name, Gina somebody who plays Cara Dune, Dune, something like that. She used to be an MMA fighter.
Yeah.
So she's already super tough, and I did like her character a lot.
She's so tough. She's so fit.
So overall, I would definitely recommend The Mandalorian, even to the casual or non-Star Wars fan. I like the stories. I didn't think that the sci-fi stuff was over the top.
No.
Although I'm into that stuff, so I'm used to it. Mm-hmm. I thought that there is a Star Wars kind of, I want to call it like branding, sort of. Like the colors, the creatures, the planets, the ships. They were all, like, on point and easy to look at. And the music, I don't know, everything just felt seamless. And
it really, really tight. Great direction, Jon Favreau. But also, did you notice each episode had a guest director? So that was kind of interesting.
I didn't notice that. Yeah. I did know that Carl Weathers directed one of the episodes.
Each episode had a guest director. And I loved how Bill Burr made a cameo, and I thought he did a really nice job. I had never seen him acting before. I've only listened to his podcast, so that was cool.
That was a special treat to see Bill Burr a couple times.
Yeah, he did a good job.
He had a great
character.
I was
impressed.
Okay, so that's what we've been watching. We just finished season two, so it looks like I haven't done any research, but I don't know if The Mandalorian is coming back, but at the end of season two, at the end of the credits, they did have a brief preview, and it looks like Boba Fett will have his own series coming up in December 21. But I don't know that much about it, so maybe next episode we can learn a little bit more about what's next in store for The Mandalorian. Good stuff. That's what we've been watching.
Yeah, it was awesome.
What did you bring to the table? So each episode in this season, we're each going to bring something to share.
I brought a book that I finished, one of the books I finished this month. I'll bring another book podcast next time of the other book I finished. But this book is called Quit Like a Woman, The Radical Choice to Not Drink in a Culture Obsessed with Alcohol by Holly Whitaker. National bestseller. It's getting a lot of buzz right now, possibly because a lot of people are doing Dry January, possibly because a lot of people have found themselves drinking a lot during the pandemic. But it was quite an interesting book to read when you are not drinking for a month.
How did you stumble upon this book?
I actually saw someone on my Goodreads list finished it, and I was like, oh, interesting, what's that? So I looked into it, and it got really good ratings, and so I ordered it.
Is it a 2020 book, or from?
Let me look. I think it is. Okay, this is a good challenge of where to find this, because I'm not finding it where I thought I would. Here it is. I missed it. 2019.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Really good, though. It was a little intense to read it. I actually thought when I was reading it, I was like, oh, I'm never going to drink again. Because I was already not drinking for a month, and I was like, I'm just not ever going to drink again. It's kind of that effective. She talks a lot about, you know, her own experience of being an alcoholic. She talks a lot about AA, the 12-step program, and how it's really like male-based, like created by white men for white men, and it's really a system that women, you know, and black people, like, you know, other populations are set up to fail in because it's for white men.
Interesting.
She also talks a lot about big alcohol in relation to like big pharma and big tobacco, and that like it hasn't had its moment yet the way that tobacco has. Like, now, you know, we all know that cigarettes are bad, and you know, it's kind of been beat into our heads, but with alcohol, that's just not the case. So it made me really start to look at, like, commercials about alcohol, things I see online about alcohol, kind of, like, who it's targeted to and, like, what the message is. So I thought that was, you know, interesting. We even talked about that one, like, Corona ad with Snoop Dogg. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just, you know, everything's the best when you're drinking alcohol. You're just on the beach and like everything's great. And like, what was the other ad that we saw where it was like this guy was like super successful and it just made it seem like drink alcohol if you want to succeed in life. And it was like, probably not, but okay. And
it's also closely tied to celebrations too.
Yes.
Like, and the commercials show that alcohol is a crucial part of any social gathering, like the Bacardi rum commercials. Everybody that's having it is like they're dancing. Vodka
having
commercials. Yeah, it's like the essential ingredient to a really fun party and being really social and fun and dancing.
Yes, exactly. And she has a whole chapter on, what does she call it? Like, what do you do for fun if you're not drinking? Because she said that was the main question that she would get when she was in recovery, is like, what do you do if you don't drink? Like, how do you have fun? And so, you know, she lists all the things that she does, and like that she still will go to like parties and bars and different events and hang out with people, and you know, she doesn't need alcohol to be able to do that. There was something else I was going to say in relation to, oh, big alcohol, back to that, about like how it targets women. And so it was interesting. I think I told you I went to this like really cute stationery store, craft store, a couple weeks ago. And I was getting stationery, and they had this whole like party section, and most of it was for like bachelorette parties. And I told you that they had these straws that are specifically sized to put in a wine bottle, and they were pink. And I thought, oh my God, that's so messed up. That's exactly what she's talking about. Here's a straw to put in a wine bottle targeted for women, and it's just like, you should never be putting a straw in a wine bottle. That's crazy. Like,
but yeah. So would you say in the book, like, I mean, obviously the title is Quit Like a Woman.
Mm-hmm.
So besides being targeted for alcohol ads,
mm-hmm.
other aspects
just the recovery process. Like, I mean, she made her own website and her own, like, recovery program and culture specifically for women and underserved populations. LGBTQ, you know, Black people, Native people. So she is really focused on helping people recover who really fall through the cracks in the AA, like, white male system. And so she has a whole, you know, model and support system around that. She also really focuses a lot on how, you know, we just blame drugs and alcohol. We were talking about this with friends. Like, we just blame drugs and alcohol for people's life being a mess. But what we don't look at is all of, like, the underlying stuff that sort of got them to the place where they needed to use alcohol and drugs as medicine. So, like, trauma, family issues, mental health conditions, all of that. So you need to really be treating those things as well as the addiction, the quote-unquote addiction.
So, I mean, obviously we just had a beer, but even knowing that, I would say, well, would you say that it's changed the way you look at what you drink and when you drink?
It really has. I don't, like I said about tobacco, like, I know smoking is bad, and, you know, everyone knows that. It's been sort of like we've been beat over the head with it. But, like, I didn't, I mean, I guess in the back of my mind, I know drinking alcohol is not good for your health, but, like, it's just not at the forefront as drugs and tobacco are. Like, it's not as obvious. We don't get that message. Like, it, you know, alcohol has that very tiny, like, women should not drink this if they're pregnant. Like, we know this, but aside from that, we don't think about, you know, how bad it is. And so that was something that kind of terrified me about the book, honestly. It was just, like, the connections to different, like, cancers and diseases and conditions of alcohol. So, yes, 100%. It has made me really be more aware of the potential, like, harmful effects on your body.
Yeah, it seems like we hear about all the harmful effects of hard drug use and illegal drugs and cigarettes. But for adults, drinking alcohol is, like, not really a thing that concerns us too much.
Right.
I don't know, speaking from my own perspective.
I totally agree. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really interesting. Am I going to quit drinking because of it? No, probably not. Am I going to think about it more and, like, drink in moderation? Yes. More so than previously. Yeah, it was a really interesting book. Definitely recommend reading if you're a woman, but also for anyone, really, because I think it does just give you, like, a new perspective on the way, like, alcohol is just advertised to us and things like that.
I like things that open your eyes up a little bit, and when you're watching TV, you're like, hey, I know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you just become more aware of those kind of things, so I definitely think that's really good.
And you start to look at what you're drinking and you're like, wait a minute, I don't actually know what's in here.
Well, yeah, that was the other really crazy thing that she points out, is that most alcohol products don't have the ingredients list on them. Beer usually does, but they don't, like, wine doesn't. We actually looked up that, like, Vizzy hard seltzer, and it doesn't, like, it doesn't obviously explain, like, where the alcohol comes from. I thought the other interesting thing that she does a lot, which is pretty, like, a slap in the face, honestly, is, like, she interchanges saying drinking alcohol with the drinking ethanol, like, pretty regularly throughout the book, and it really kind of, like, drives it home of, like, oh, like, I'm drinking something that's probably not really meant to be ingested. So I thought that was a very strategic choice on her part. So... Yeah.
Thanks for bringing such an eye-opening, hard-hitting piece to the podcast.
I'll bring something a little lighter next time.
Well, mine is a little bit lighter.
Good.
It is And I'm very proud that I finished this because it is a serious brick of a book. Mm. A Promised Land by Barack Obama. You may have heard of Barack Obama.
Yes. Unless you've been living under a rock.
Which some people do. He wrote this book, A Promised Land, and it is the first part of, I think, two parts of his presidential memoirs. So it starts all the way at when he is kind of first considering politics and in college, goes through his some of his campaigns for lesser offices, his community organizing, his successful Senate campaign, his presidential campaign, and then the first few years that he's in office. And it ends with the killing of Osama bin Laden.
Oh, whoa.
So he's not finished yet. I describe it as a brick of a book because I got it as a gift, and I got a gift card as a gift and decided to splurge and buy the hardcover version of the book. It is a stately memoir.
Mm-hmm.
It's solid, and I have to say, for being, let's see, 700 pages?
Wow.
About 700. I cruised through it. Like it,
you really did.
It really, yeah, it's about 700 pages. It's, I would describe it as like kind of sitting with Barack and him recounting tales of his presidency. And I think that was a positive side of it and a negative side.
Hmm.
At times it got a little rambly.
Okay.
And I felt like he jumped off from one topic and kind of bounced to something else. He would go from, like, I don't know, talking to wounded veterans and their families, and then in the next few pages it would be about the financial crisis, and then Sasha and the puppy at the White House. It got a little bit bouncy for me.
Mm. Let me ask, do you think that's a reflection, though, of, like, what it could be like to be a president and just have, like, 100 million things happening, like, at one time? Or?
I think that's completely accurate. Mm. And that comes off in the book. So I think one of the best things I liked about it was that it was an insider's view. And he really is very open and candid about what it was like to have the job, especially as a first-term president and one with not so much government experience and more like people experience, community experience, rather than like Senate and government process experience or military experience. And he talks a lot about, you know, all the different things that he would have to juggle. He kind of tells, not kind of, he tells the stories of, you know, talking about the bin Laden, he knows that the special forces team is like getting ready and he's given the okay to enter the compound and like capture or kill this person that they think is Osama bin Laden. And then he like gives the mission a go and then has to go and be at a dinner where I think is like military families and veterans are being recognized. So it's like, that's a hugely important event that he has to be a part of and show up for and smile for pictures and like talk and make connections with these people. But in the back of his mind, he knows the whole time that like this, you know, world shaking event is about to take place.
Oh,
and
my
like,
gosh.
So that's kind of, it was cool to think, because we only really get the news and the articles when it comes to a presidency, and it was really interesting to read kind of behind the scenes of, like, you know, how he prepares for these big, giant conferences of world leaders, what it was like, you know, shaking different people's hands, how it is to juggle all these different things all day long, and then walk, you know, like 2 minutes and be at home.
Wow.
With two young daughters and a wife and a mother-in-law that lives there, and to have to switch your brain back and forth, and to have, you know, come home from work. I mean, a hard day at the office is an understatement when you're talking about
no kidding
being the president. And, you know, he really tried hard to still keep things normal as possible for his family. Wow. So sit down, have dinner, talk about school or whatever, and then everyone would kind of like go to sleep and he would like go back to work. Oh, essentially.
Talk about like work life separation, right? I mean, we thought it was challenging for us working from home and having that separation. Imagine that.
Yeah, I thought that was probably my favorite thing, was to learn about, you know, his experiences doing that. So I found those parts of the book to go really smoothly for me, and I ate that stuff up. Hmm. The opposite side of that was, and to no fault of his own, he inherited a huge financial sort of dumpster fire. And there was the huge recession, and the housing market just went crazy and fell, gosh. And people's retirements went nuts. There was big banks and bailouts and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he talks about those at length in a way that, well, he writes about them in a way that is pretty accessible, mm-hmm. and easy to understand, but still for me, like for my brain, I was like, I kind of trudged through those parts when he describes bailing out banks and why one thing should have been done and another thing should have been done. But those financial and market and stock market type things, I had to work through a little bit, but I found myself much more enjoying the parts where he talks about his family and things that he was doing for the environment and things like that. Social justice type things kind of clicked with me. But that's just my particular interests. The financial markets and how Obama regulated those and dealt with those problems is something that you're interested in. You will find ample information about that. Another thing that I liked was, it was kind of like a trip down memory lane in a way, because I think Obama's presidency, the election and his presidency was probably the first time in my adult life that I was actually semi-interested in politics and what was going on.
Same.
I think Obama, I mean, what, I was in my late 20s, and that election was the first time that I like actually followed the debates and, you know, was paying some attention. There was Twitter and Facebook were just coming out, but, you know, we still followed along with what was going on. I remember standing in line to vote
there, me too,
in South Carolina. And so it was like remembering those events, remembering what happened, and some of the things that happened during his first term that I had forgotten about. Mm-hmm. One of the big things was the beer summit, which
I loved when you told me about that.
Which was interesting to me, and I made connections to the presidential term that we have just been through, and then this upcoming one that we're in right now, where, you know, that was an event that really sparked a lot of racial tension and opened a lot of people's eyes, I think, to the continued kind of not so good relationship between the police and people of color. And it was fun to read his interpretation of the event. And he kind of talks about, he was giving a speech, a reporter kind of surprised him with a question about the incident, and he gave this kind of flippant offhand remark, and it just got grabbed by the press and really, really blown up, and he had to figure out how he was gonna smooth things over. And that's something that happens almost all the time, is like you think that you're talking about one thing and you say something that's kind of like not scripted, and you know, you've got to figure out how to dig yourself out from the hole. And so I think that was cool that he admits his mistakes, and you know, and for the Beer Summit, which is something that I don't know that I've heard of happening again or anything like that, where he just kind of invites people from the public to come and have a beer with him and Joe Biden and kind of talk over race issues and things like that. So I thought that was really cool to read about. He talks about Deepwater Horizon. Do you remember Deepwater Horizon?
I don't remember that.
So it's really cool the way he will like kind of end a chapter by talking about how great things are going, and then the last sentence is like, and then a hole opened up in the bottom of the ocean.
Oh.
And it's like, that's kind of the way that a presidency goes, but his in particular was just like, okay, we're getting somewhere. We're starting to bring some jobs back. Financial things have started to level off a little bit, and my approval ratings are, you know, okay or whatever, and then you just never know like what disaster is coming next.
Yeah.
And Deepwater Horizon was, I think it was BP was doing this offshore drilling off the coast of the Gulf Coast.
Oh.
And they had this really deep well, and it malfunctioned. It like cracked and started leaking oil from far down below the earth's surface up into the Gulf.
Yeah.
And I remembered, as I was reading it, I was remembering being somewhere, like some waiting room or something, and they had a TV, and at a certain point they just put in underwater cameras that just filmed the oil spewing out like 24 hours a day. You could see a live feed of oil spewing out. I remember sitting and watching that and just being like, this is insane. But
how to make yourself the most anxious. Yeah, really.
So he talks a lot about how he dealt with that, and you know, all the pushback from that, and everything sort of happens like right in time with him trying to get some kind of legislation passed, which was probably, that'll be the last thing I talk about. That was something that was so informational for me. It was like, it wasn't just about his experiences. He really does describe and give the history behind passing certain legislation and how difficult it is to say like, okay, well, I want to pass this, for example, some kind of environmental legislation, and all of the different things that get in your way when you're trying to do that. And you've got Republicans and Democrats, and they come from different constituencies and places around the country where, like, there's these environmental interests, there's these big business interests. How are you going to get so-and-so's vote? The one person's like, listen, I'm not going to be able to vote for this. Like, there's no way. I have a re-election campaign coming up. And if I back you on this, like, I'm going to lose my seat. There's no way I'm behind you on this.
Yeah.
And just cajoling people and being like, all right, what do I have to do to get you to sign on to do this? What do I have to do? And there's just so much behind the scenes effort that goes on to just get something passed. Mm-hmm. It takes so much time. And as outsiders to the process, we just see like, oh, he didn't give us this aspect of what we wanted. It didn't go far enough. Oh, it's only this amount of money. He should have got this amount of money. Or like, it's almost like the president can like never do good enough.
They're always gonna lose. I mean, someone's always gonna be upset.
Someone's always gonna be upset, no matter how hard he was working.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe coming to a point where he felt even triumphant that he got something passed, he reflects on how there's always someone that's like, that wasn't good enough. It's not far enough.
And you're always to blame, even though there's so much more than him that goes into it in terms of like all the people at the table. But he's always going to be the messenger and the one to blame.
Right. And he's the one to take the blame, like for the Deepwater Horizon, right? Like everyone can find someone to blame for those type of things, but he's kind of like a lightning rod when it comes to comes to those things. So I thought it was really good. Nice. I think it has something for everyone, even people that maybe don't follow politics too much. I thought it was really accessible and easy to read, very conversational to read, and he does like a lot of explaining. He'll give you like coming up to a meeting with Vladimir Putin, he'll spend like 5 or 6 pages giving a history of Vladimir Putin and how he came to power and how they prepared for the meeting, and then he'll describe the meeting rather than just assuming that you know.
Oh, I like that.
Know those things. So I like the little history lessons, and there were parts that I did trudge through, as with any book, and then there were parts that I was like, ooh, yes, he's talking about whatever, and I was excited about that. So I thought it was balanced, and for 700 pages, I mean, I ate it up. It was really well done.
Yeah, you read that fast.
And I thought it was excellent, so I would highly recommend it. A Promised Land by Barack Obama. I don't know what the plans are for the second part of it, but it ended on a really cool note with the finding Osama bin Laden and how they went into all that stuff. It was really, that stuff to me is like super interesting. All right, so that's what we brought to the table. We talked about The Mandalorian, which is what we've been watching. You talked about Quit Like a Woman by Holly Whitaker. I talked about A Promised Land by Barack Obama. I'll put both of those books on our Goodreads profile. That's where you can find any of the books that we talk about on the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can help support our little podcast project in a few different ways. You can keep us caffeinated, which is always good. You can go to the show's description and click the link to support us with a monthly contribution to keep us caffeinated. Or if Venmo's more your style, you can find us on Venmo at GIBL Podcast. And you can shoot us enough money to buy a cup of coffee on Venmo to keep us bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So those are two ways you can support financially. You can also find us on Twitter at GIBLpodcast.com. We're on Goodreads. You can leave a rating and a review if your podcast listening profile does that. I don't know. I know Apple does. You can do that wherever you listen. We invite you to send us an email at yourhoststeve@gmail.com with a question or a recommendation or whatever you want. And we want to answer it and talk about it on the show. And lastly, you can share this podcast with anyone that you think might like it. All right. That's it. Your first episode.
My first episode.
Co-host. You did a great job.
Thank you.
We will see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.